Thanks. That's President Mike. Or Vice President Mike. Okay, we're back in session. First item is messages from the House. Apparently we have some today.
January 26, 2015, message from the House. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 25, Railroad Rolling Stock Tax Exemption Sunset, ayes 53, noes 7. House Bill number 36, Emergency 9/11 Providers Immunity, ayes 59, noes 1. House Bill number 82, Brewery and Microbrewery Licenses Definition, ayes 60. House Bill number 23, Next Generation Science Standards 2, ayes 39, noes 21. House Bill number 76, Public Library Endowment Challenge Program Amendments, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. January the 26, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, pass, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 74, Front License Plate Requirement, ayes 52, noes 8. House Bill number 100, Highway Funding, ayes 58, noes 2. House Bill number 73, Development of Education Standards, ayes 58, noes 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Is that it? Yeah. That's okay. We will have reports from standing committees.
January 26, 2015, Mr. Predner, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 90. Medicaid Chiropractor Service 2 reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, excuse Senator Kraft, Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 26, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 3, Right to Try, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 29, Motor Vehicle Driver's License Exemptions, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Esquivel, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman. January the 26, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 112, Criminal Stalking, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Esquivel, Kinski, Von Fladren. No, Senators Christensen and Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman. January the 26, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 100, Prescription Drug Monitoring Program Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, Kinsey, Von Fladern, Senator Christensen, Chairman. January the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 106, powdered alcohol. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski. No, Senator Von Flader and Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Is that door supposed to be closed? Is that it? Is that it? Okay. All right, Mr. Majority, Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for consideration on general file.
Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole to discuss bills on general file.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Von Flader, the desk is yours.
That's pretty weak. Committee of the Whole will come back to order. The first bill for our consideration is 106, powdered alcohol.
Senate File 106, powdered alcohol, sponsored by Senator Landon. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Kinski. No, Senator Von Flader and Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Christensen, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, hold on here. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I recommend they do with a due pass on Senate File 106. To present that bill will be Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in keeping with the theme of the day, Senate District 27 brings you Senate File 106, which is powdered alcohol. And kind of interesting, I wanted to start off with how this came to my attention. It was actually during my day job that it came to my attention via some of those vehicles that you get, newsletters that come across from your associations that you belong to. And as many of you know, I am an administrator at a college. And when I read about this product and the fact that the FDA at that point had released the product for sale, I thought, boy, howdy, we're going to have a rodeo with this stuff. And so it was only, you know, a month or two later that I ran into someone at an establishment which sells alcohol legally, and he brought this to my attention and asked if I'd be willing to help. And so that's the genesis of powdered alcohol. I've actually had people come up to me, and just real quickly, the powdered alcohol bill goes into Chapter 10, Mr. Chairman, under miscellaneous alcohol beverages, and 101 was passed in 2005, and that's a provision in our statutes that disallows alcohol devices to be used. And you might, those of you who are here probably remember that it was all about those devices that help you to inhale alcohol. And so that's what that statute was all about. This is a parallel statute that would simply make this powdered alcohol product illegal to possess or sell, Mr. Chairman. So that's what the bill does. I have passed out some information that does a pretty good job of running down several different things for you with regard to this bill, and I would commend it to you. And I think it's really probably effective enough if I take you to this manufacturer of this product, to their website. Now, once this was approved by the FDA, Mr. Chairman, it became clear right away that there was a lot of backlash. And in fact, as many as 26 states have now taken up this legislation. at some stage or another. There are a lot of states wrestling with powdered alcohol just like we are today. Given that, the manufacturer of this product immediately took their website down, and interestingly, the FDA withdrew its release of the product. And whether or not they'll re-release the product or not, we don't know. I suspect they might, but the website, among other things, said, what's worse than going to a concert sporting event and having to pay $10, $15, $20 for a mixed drink with tax and tip? Are you kidding me? Take alcohol to the venue and enjoy a mixed drink for a fraction of the price. My apologies, Mr. Chairman. I have to say that might have been a formal name. That is a manufacturer. Powdered alcohol is what we're talking about. Maybe you're a college football fan and you're not allowed to drink in the stadium, but boy, this allows you to just go buy yourself one of those cola drinks and add whatever amount of this stuff in there. And you can see that there's a lot of room for shenanigans, a lot of room for some difficulty with this product. We really don't need it at the college level, I can tell you that. We're doing all we can to keep our arms around the illegal use of substances and alcohol as it is. I think that there's just far too much room for abuse of this product, Mr. Chairman. So that's the bill. It just simply adds to our statutes that we really don't want this product around. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand for questions.
Any further discussion on Senate File 106? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and against this particular bill, and I understand the interest here in protecting our students, and I've got a big student population as well, but I spent some time looking into powdered alcohol, so I'd understand it a little bit better, and then I tried to make it at home, but I couldn't get the products quickly enough to get back here with a big bucket of it so you all could try it. If we want to lay it back for 2 or 3 days, I'll get what we need, and we'll all give it a shot. So that'll be somebody else's motion, not mine, Mr. Chairman. But the reality is, powdered alcohol is the product of a recipe, a simple recipe. You take alcohol, you take maltodextrin, which is a powder. It's in your sports drink products and a lot of other things you drink and eat. And you mix those things together at the right ratio. And the maltodextrin, which is a starch, it's a linear chain starch, absorbs the alcohol and turns it into a dry powder. So it's basically two ingredients that you might have at home that you don't even have to cook it to mix it. You literally mix those things together. In fact, a lot of people, beer manufacturers, put maltodextrin in their alcohol already to thicken it. It gives it a little bit better of a mouthfeel. So you're already halfway to powdered alcohol. They just don't use enough of it. I understand, again, the intent of this bill is a good one. There could be concerns. There's dangers inherent to the abuse of alcohol. But at the end of the day, banning a two-ingredient mixture that is readily available at home and making it illegal to possess that substance without a fine might be going overboard. It seems that alcohol-related policies at our institutions, our University of Wyoming and the colleges, to appropriately handle this from a rules and regulation standpoint, just saying we don't want this, you can't have it at the games, this is a prohibited substance, is an excellent way of addressing it rather than making it illegal for me. And I still want to make it, Mr. Chairman. I want to go home and when I actually have access to the maltodextrin in a clean form, I want to play around and see what this stuff looks like. And I'd better do that by July 1st if we pass this legislation so that I'm not a criminal once I possess it. It is no worse and no better than alcohol. It's alcohol. It's alcohol that's in a form that makes it dry powder. If you have too much of it, ingest too much of it, that's going to be bad for you, but no worse than it would have been if you had ingested that much alcohol in shot form or whatever else. So we're indicting alcohol here. All of the harms in powdered alcohol are the harms of alcohol. And if we want to outlaw alcohol, that's a interesting and separate conversation that I think they had once a long time ago. But I think to use my good friend's term and the sponsor of this legislation, this one seems to me like a coffee shop bill. This is one where we sit around at the coffee shop and we realize there's some downside to it, but when you start looking at it, it's just not as bad as it seems. There's reasonable uses. It's not a unique chemical formula that you'd be able to put in the legislation. At the end of the day, it's still just alcohol. It's ethanol. It's no different. It's ethanol sticking to something. That's it. So I don't know how we go about banning that.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Article 3, Section 16 of the Constitution. Members of the legislature shall, in all cases except treason, felony, and violation of their oath of office, and breach of the peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at sessions at their respective houses, and going to or returning from same, and for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. My question for you, Mr. Chairman, is our colleague and are we protected if from arrest by the revenuers, the federal revenuers, if during the session we manufacture this substance and bring it up here and pass it around?
The chair doesn't rule on such things. Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chair, interesting that all senator would bring up that immunity from arrest, because as I was reflecting on the earlier conversation and the good senator from the university's town talking about elements and recipes, well, meth is also a recipe made from common household products, and I'd hope he doesn't try everything you can make at home.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious whether my wife's Harvey Wallbanger cake is going to be illegal after this, you know, because it's alcohol and it mixes with a powder and you eat it. And if you eat enough of it, you might get indigestion, but you could just get a little bit loopy. You know, I don't know how far we're going here, but for the most part, we had this alcohol without liquid thing here a few years ago, and all we're doing is that we're just protecting the people who buy stamped liquor, and who sell stamped liquor and sell beer, because people can get inebriated in another way than what we've always done in the past, and we're just protecting their turf. Now, if you want to protect their turf, go ahead and vote this thing out. It doesn't make any difference one way or the other, because a good senator from Albany County is exactly right. You know, it's an intoxicant. It's another way to do it. But I don't quite understand it, because you're having to buy labeled alcohol anyway. You know, so I don't know where they're losing their marketplace on this one.
Further discussion on center file. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 106, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
The chair is in doubt. We have a... Will the clerk please count? All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Yes. 16 to 11. The noes are really loud today. This bill, Senate File 106, has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 3, Right to Try. Would the clerk please read?
Senate File 3, Right to Try, sponsored by Senator Burns. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, who who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that Senate file 3 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment, and I'm going to ask that be read in, and I'll move it after the initial explanation of the bill, because it will help the Senate understand the standing committee amendment if we have the initial explanation of the bill. So, Mr. Chairman, at this time, I yield to Senator Burns for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Burns.
Let's read it.
Let's read in the amendment. It's not going to be moved at this time. Not even read it in. Okay. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, before I start on an explanation of this bill, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, going back to the coins that we've all now received, if you recall, I asked everybody if they'd be willing to receive 24 coins instead of 25. Those coins that you donated back each went to one each of the staff, the permanent LSO staff, plus the session staff, plus the legislators who were here last year who voted for it but weren't there this year. I've been asked to read this letter, this note. It's signed by all the staff here in the Senate. Dear Senators, we would each like to thank you for your very special gift of the Wyoming coin. It is an extraordinary work of art and a true generational treasure. Your overwhelming generosity and thoughtfulness has touched our hearts. Sincerely, the 63rd Legislative Senate staff. So I just wanted to let you know you are appreciated. Now, while you're appreciated, I would like to show my appreciation to you by explaining this bill to you. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 3, Right to Try. As many of us already know, the approval process for an FDA drug to be approved takes anywhere between 8 to 10 years and can cost up to $800 million to get approved. The physician hours for an FDA expanded network for the paperwork takes at least 100 hours for physicians to fill out for their programs. What Senate File 3 does is it kind of short circuits the route. And what it does is it allows terminal patients who have exhausted all other avenues for recovery to be able to take some of these experimental drugs. And, Mr. Chairman, experimental drugs is a term of art, and it is drugs that have already passed the level one studies of FDA testing. FDA has 3 and 4 levels of testing, 3 or 4 phases of testing, because the FDA is charged with dealing with, A, the safety of a drug, and, B, the efficacy. How effective is it? So after phase one, that's when they've dealt with the safety of the drug. They don't know yet how effective it may be. But if you're a terminal patient and you've been told you have 8 months to live, you don't have time to find out about that testing. So what this does is this allows an avenue through the various physicians, if they are able to, and through the drug companies, for a terminal patient to be able to get those drugs. Mr. Chairman, that is basically the bill. It's very simple. And they have to, going through the bill itself, starting on page 2, from line 13, to be an eligible patient, you have to have, A, a terminal illness, B, considered all other treatment options currently approved by the United States Food and Drug Administration, C, received a recommendation from a physician for an investigational drug, biological product, or device. D, give written, informed consent for the use of the investigational drug and biological product or device. E, have documentation from a physician that the person meets the requirements of this. Then we go into a definition of investigational drug, definition of terminal illness. Mr. Chairman, after that, you get to page 4, and here's what the on 357-1803, lines 4 through 9, it basically says that the manufacturer doesn't have to give you the drug, and they can or not charge you if they want. That's the rest of the page. They may require an eligible patient to pay for the cost of the drug. And a healthcare insurer is not required to provide coverage for this. And then on pages 5 and 6, what we did was we put in here is we protected the doctor so that the Board of Medicine cannot take the doctor's license for having prescribed the drug. And on page 6, it does not create a private cause of action against the manufacturer of the investigative drug. Mr. Chairman, some concerns were expressed in committee, and so the committee came with a standing committee amendment to address some aspects of this bill, and at this point I would ask that the standing committee amendment be read in.
Senator Burns, that is not your amendment, so I'm going to default to the
All right, then amendment. To ask to be it to be read in, and with an explanation of the standing committee amendment, I ask that you call on the chairman.
And Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I ask the standing committee amendment be read in.
Senate File 3, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Fellow senators, we thought that you'd understand the standing committee amendment better if we explained the bill first. The standing committee amendment deals with three issues. They're on page 3. There is a provision that these products has successfully completed phase 1 of a clinical trial. The testimony we heard in committee was that that was better worded as phase 2, because phase 1 is a very small trial. The testimony we heard, often as many few as 20 people who are healthy, who do not have the disease. And the test really is to see if the drug is going to harm them. So passing phase 1 doesn't mean anything in terms of efficacy of the drug. Phase 2, it's a larger group, 100 to 200 people. You're testing the drug on people with the disease. You are trying to establish some dosage levels, so that when you administer the drug, you have some notion, Mr. Chairman, of how much is needed. And it's a first crack at efficacy. So we thought that advice was well taken. And that's the, on line 13, standing committee amendment, that's what's going on there. And then we had another idea. What we're seeing quite frequently, Mr. Chairman, is that drugs get approved, particularly in Europe, well before they're approved here and come into general use over there. And I know, Mr. Chairman, personally, that one of the standard diabetes drugs, one that I took for quite some time, got approved in Europe well before it was approved here. The same is true of the beta blockers. The same has been true of quite a number of drugs. So we added the provision that the drugs can be used if they've been, as an alternate here, has been approved for general use in one or more of the countries of the organization, and note that spelling is the British spelling, for economic cooperation and development. That's the advanced countries, Canada, Europe, Japan, that set of countries. So if it's been approved over there, then it can come in under this program. That, I think, improves the quality of the drug these people are taking. It means there's, Mr. Chairman, some notion of what the dosages is. It means that there's either it's gone through the phase 2 here, or it's been approved in one of these other developed countries. That will, Mr. Chairman, I think, rule out the, you know, the snake oil cures that people do sometimes try to sell to the desperately ill. You're dealing here with a reputable alternative that maybe hasn't been fully proved, but will work. The other things we did, Mr. Chairman, in the testimony in committee, there was objection from the medical community to the provision on page 5, lines 5 through 16, which says you can't take action against a physician's license over any of this. We thought, gee, with the bill there, they could still take action. And we took this provision out. They could then take action against somebody who was doing something outrageous. But as long as they are following the terms of this bill, I wouldn't think that they would take action or could successfully take action. So we took that out because of the opposition. And then on page 6, lines 7 through 13, you have an immunity clause trying to hold the attorneys at bay somehow. And I see they're not here to defend themselves. But the committee felt, why get into that kind of a side argument on this bill? What we're trying to do is give people who are in desperate stance a chance to get these drugs. And frankly, we're also trying to say to the Food Administration, Drug Administration, get your act together, get things done. You're running the cost through the ceiling. They're denying people cures. I don't know how many thousands or tens of thousands of people, Mr. Chairman, the Food and Drug Administration is killing every year. But it's significant. And they need to shape up. And the more states, 5 states have passed this already, the more that do, the better chance we'll get the message to that dinosaur in Washington and get them into the modern era. And that's going to become increasingly important as we develop more and more specialized drugs to reach particular genomic situations in cancer. So that makes this an important bill. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. I think it makes it a much better bill.
Senator Scott, one correction. You had page 6. It's the amendment actually says 5 through 13. You had said 7 through 13. Just slight correction there. Yeah, not a big deal. Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that you divide this amendment.
Sure.
Lines 1 through 28 shall be Division 1. Line 30 shall be Division 2.
Senator Burns, I'm just checking on the original changes on page 1. Delete. Page 1, line 13.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that if you change the body of the bill, the LSO will go back in and change the title language.
Which would be page 1, line 13, has delete 357-1806, which you have taken as Division 2. So Division 1 is lines 1 through 28 on your amendment, and Division 2 is line 29 and 30 on your amendment. And speaking to which one, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, speaking to Division 1, I have no problem. It did improve the bill, and I thank the chairman of the committee for it and would ask the body to vote for it.
Okay. Further discussion on Division 1 of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to Division 1, Standing Committee Number 1, to Senate File 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division 1 of Senate File, or Standing Committee 1 of Senate File 3 has passed the body. We're on Division 2. Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I have a concern with Part 2 of this, Section 2 of this amendment. In there are two provisions in this bill. One does not allow the State Board of Medicine to take action against a physician for prescribing this, and that was removed in the amendment. And I think given the common sense of the state of Wyoming, that's probably accurate and true. The concern I have is on 357-1806, if we in fact pull that out, the manufacturer of these drugs are multinational corporations, and they in fact may never authorize the prescription of their experimental drug in the state of Wyoming if that protection is not in there to protect them. They don't know the culture of Wyoming. They don't care about the culture of Wyoming. But it's an experimental drug at phase two, so we already know it's safe. So I really see no reason why we would need to remove this provision from the bill itself.
Further discussion on Division Two. Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I've got no special, I don't think the committee has any special urgency about this particular standing committee amendment. We felt that it would, the provision would endanger the bill a bit by getting the attorneys involved to debate against it and fail to support it, which is why we took it out. And maybe this is the time and the place to do it. But that's frankly, that's as far as the reasoning went, that we know the interests that are down here and how they behave, and we've seen it. And we say, it's a good bill, and it doesn't need that argument, too. But if there's a substantive reason for it, then maybe you ought to keep it.
Further discussion in Division 2, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, for my second time, this as the chairman of the committee mentioned, this is already the law in five different states. In all those states, this provision, the provision to for protection against the cause of action against the manufacturer is the law in all those. In addition, this is a very popular bill. I just learned today that this bill has been introduced in 24 additional states this session, so it's being debated as we speak. And we may end up being the outlier among, as from the manufacturer's standpoint. So they, and for the size of the state of Wyoming, they'll just say, you know, the heck with you. We're not going to sell the our experimental drug or let it be used in the state of Wyoming because that provision is not in there. So I'm actually trying to err on the side of caution. If the legal bar wants to stand up and want to exercise their concern about this, they can do it in second or third reading.
Further discussion, Majority Floor Leader, Senator.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would speak against this as well. And quite frankly, members of the Senate, when you put this kind of language in, and having had a little experience with these type of drugs for the what we're trying to accomplish here, I think you really take away the incentive, and you probably really won't have anybody utilizing it. So I'd rather err on the side of my colleague from Sheridan County, and I think you defeat this portion of the amendment.
Further discussion on number two. Section two of the amendment, it's lines 29 and 30. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the standing committee number one, second section, 29 and 30 to Senate file three, please say aye. Oh, that was overwhelming. All those in favor, all those in oppose, please say no. Number two has failed the committee of the whole. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion? Senator Bebout.
Chairman, just a question for the sponsor. And with the FDA, they have what's called an IND policy, investigative new drug, rather than one that's actually maybe further along. And I don't see that language in here anywhere. Is that something that was discussed and is not included specifically for a reason? Or is it, maybe have some further discussion about the IND part of it.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just an additional question or perhaps the opportunity for a little more discussion. You know, the only caution that I have with a bill like this is to create some sort of an expectation that can't be met. And I just wonder if there are circumstances out there where these drug companies are prohibited from developing enough of that drug that they can even make some of that product available to a wider and wider range of folks. Just wondering if we could have a little more conversation about whether or not some of these drugs are even available, you know, for people to get a hold of. Because I do know that pharmaceuticals, there are some limits that we place on them. So,
Further discussion? Senator Burns?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on the last speaker, I think he's referring to orphan drugs, and there that's a specific, also a term of art, and it's for those drugs that don't have enough people who suffer from the disease to make it worthwhile for the drug to go through the FDA approval. As I said, it costs $800 million and takes 10 years, and if you only have 4,000 people in the United States that have the disease, it doesn't make sense for them. I think the other thing he addressed was the idea of false hope, and that was raised in discussion, and that is one of the arguments I've heard against this bill about the right to try that. You've got somebody with a terminal illness. They've been told there is no hope. Prepare yourself. Oh, by the way, now we have this experimental drug, and that they, you know, now they suddenly, you know, they have already gone through all the stages of grieving and are have accepted that they're going to die. Now you suddenly give them a new drug that says, oh, this may save you. I think, frankly, that is up to the family and the particularly the doctor to let them know that it is one last chance and it probably isn't going to work. But that's something on individual cases. As far as the IND program with the FDA, that is also become mired in bureaucracy, and the IND program has taken so long to get the drugs to the people who have terminal illnesses that we don't know if it would have saved them or not, but in many cases they got the drugs weeks before they died. So this actually short-circuit that and can cut that down by months at a time, too. And if you were told you have 6 months to live, 6 months is 1 month or even 2 months is quite a time. The other problem with the IND program is the amount of paperwork that physicians have to put in order to qualify to do it. And a lot of physicians are just so busy they can't afford to do it. The paperwork I have is it takes up to 100 hours of paperwork on the part of the physician to get their patient to qualify for the IND program. In addition, sometimes, especially on the part of the drug manufacturers, with terminal patients, they will not allow the terminal patients into the IND program because it skews the results on a percentage basis for the value of the drug. It may work for them, it may not work for them, but if they're terminal and they die, the percentage goes down.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, we did have testimony in committee on the food and drug, I think it's the IND program, they've got a compassionate use program where you can apply and get one of these drugs that's in the channels. And the testimony was that the Food and Drug Administration is so bureaucratic that the approval process takes an undue period of time and just doesn't work. And they were citing an example of an activist advocate in other fields who knew how to work around government programs, who needed a drug that was experimental for advanced breast cancer. She got her permission a day after she died. And that's the Food and Drug Administration. The other question was raised, is the drug going to be actually available? And that's one of the reasons for including, as the Standing Committee Amendment did, the provision that allows us to use drugs that are approved for general use in OECD countries. Because then you can get it there, and if need be, you can, in the great American tradition, smuggle it in. And that works. So that gives us a practical source of the drugs.
Further discussion. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the chairman of the committee just reminded me tangentially of another example of this. There is a sunscreen that is out being used everywhere else in the first world that is considered miles beyond anything that's allowed here. And the way that skin cancer has skyrocketed in the United States, the FDA is still dragging its feet on approving this. It's been used for up to 10 years in other countries already. And I think that's a perfect example of the need for a bill like this.
Further discussion? Seeing none, you all ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 3, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 3 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 100. Reading clerk.
Senate File 100, Prescription Drug Monitoring Program Amendments, sponsored by Senator Escobel. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senator Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinsey, Von Flatern, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Christensen, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when Committee of the Whole rises, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 100. There are standing committee amendments. I'd ask the reading clerk to read in the amendment. You have it, Dave?
Yeah. Senate File 100, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 4.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To further discuss the bill and amendment, I'd ask you to call
Senator
on...
Senator Christensen, do you want to move the amendment?
I'd move the amendment.
Would you like to move the amendment?
Yes, please.
All right. So
move the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. And who are you going to yield the floor to?
I'd defer...
Senator Escobel, would you like to get dispense with the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll get to the amendment in a few minutes, Mr. Chairman. But this bill was brought at the request of the Wyoming...
Senator Escobel, could you keep your microphone pretty close?
Oh, you bet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 100, Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, was brought at the request of the Wyoming State Board of Pharmacy. And the Wyoming State Board of Pharmacy has been working and meeting on various aspects of their role within their responsibilities. And one was working on enhancements on the prescription drug monitoring program, which this bill addresses one aspect of it. This bill is basically a tracking system. It's a tracking system of prescription drugs that they're in the controlled drugs that are in the 1, 2, and 3, and 4, in the 2, 3, and 4 category. And these are the drugs that have a high potential for abuse. These are the drugs that many people... do doctor shopping for, things of that nature. So this bill, as stated previously, is a tracking system bill. It's designed to prevent drug abuse and doctor shopping. And basically what it calls for on page 2 is that it brings the information in the database more up to date from 7 days after dispensing a prescription for a controlled substance to 24 hours after dispensing. And that basically means that if a physician, pharmacist suspects that maybe their patient might be abusing a certain prescription, they can check the database and find out within 24 hours if they've got the same prescription from someone else. It also, this bill also allows delegates to register for online access to assist prescribers and pharmacists in getting reports on patients who may be doctor shoppers. Yeah, so that's basically the purpose of the bill, Mr. Chairman, in regard to the amendment. For some reason or another, when the bill came out of the Legislative Service Office, the Act on page 3, Section 3, was made the Act effective July 1, 2015. The Board of Pharmacy, in order to get this program running, had requested that the program, that the Act become effective January 1 of 2016. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I stand for any questions if there are any, and try to answer them. As stated previously, it's a tracking system program to prevent drug abuse and doctor shopping.
Thank you, Senator Esquivel. We're on the amendment. Any more discussion? Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee 1 has passed the committee. We are back on the bill, Senate File 100. Further discussion, Senator Cooper?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask the sponsor if he could explain there in Section 2 on the last page 3, the repealers, what that's all about.
Senator Esquivel?
As I recall, Mr. Senator Cooper, this was a pilot program, and it was initially a pilot program that was funded by the federal government, and in this case, that pilot program would be repealed, and this would be inserted in its place.
And Senator Esquivel, just if you'd like to not use proper names when addressing fellow on the floor. Other discussion on Senate File 100? Having seen none, are you all ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 100, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 100 has passed the committee of the whole. Next bill. Senator Cope.
May I have privilege of the floor, please?
You certainly may.
I'd like to introduce some people to you. Tonight we're having a reception for the Buffalo Bill Center of the West in conjunction with Sinclair Oil Company, who helps us fund what we call the Miles Program for Youth. Have here today, and first of all, I'd like to invite all of you to come out tonight. Sitting with me, I have Bruce and Jan Eldridge. Bruce is the executive director of the Buffalo Bill Center, and in the bulk, and his wife, Jan. And just a minute here, and let's see if I can get all the names here.
Technically challenged, Senator Coe.
And up in the balcony, I'd like to recognize Kelly Jensen, Gina Penn Schneider, Gretchen Heinrich, Megan Smith, Lynn Petit, and Rebecca Taggart. And they came all the way down from Cody for the reception tonight. Please welcome these folks with the Buffalo Bill Center of the West.
Welcome to the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you like to have the floor for a second? Nope, you're good. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 29.
Senate File 29, Vehicle Driver's License Exemption, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Esquivel, Johnson, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Senator Meyer, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 29, Motor Vehicle Driver's License Exemptions. And, Mr. Chairman, there was an amendment for a substitute bill. Is
I have
that
the amendment
in?
Right in.
Senate File 29, first Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, that substitute number 1 be substituted for Senate File 29, and that substitute number 1 do pass.
Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll explain basically the reason for a substitute a little bit.
Did you move the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would move that amendment, substitute number 1 for Senate File 29, and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Folks, essentially in the interim, there's quite a little bit of discussion about safety manners. And there's some work done over in the House that I think put everybody's mind at ease a little bit, because it was just a straight exemption. And what we went in here and we did an endorsement plan rather than just straight exemption. So with that, Mr. Chairman, the other thing that I have to report is that in 29, Majority Floor Leader cut, that we had like over $1 million negative budget impact on original Senate 29. This substitute has no significant budget impact, so we, and that primarily, Mr. Chairman, when that language in this bill shows up, I'll explain to the committee how that came about. So if we go immediately over to page two, that first language that saved us $1 million really was a federal requirement that necessarily stated that anybody under the age of 18 is prohibited from operating a gross vehicle weight.
Senator, could I interrupt for a second?
Certainly.
I actually think we're on an amendment that would allow this bill to be further discussed. You could argue that this is an amendment. The bill is the amendment, and
yes,
is up to you. So we'll call for a vote on the amendment, which doesn't pass the bill.
Okay, that's fine. If we want to call for the vote on the amendment, I'd call for the question on the amendment.
Now, further discussion. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt standing committee amendment to Senate File 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed the committee of the whole. We're on the new bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we go to page two, essentially there's a federal requirement that if you had anybody, that this language has to be included in your driver's license section, or you essentially lose some highway funds, and that was the $1 million impact, which just that language is that no one under 18 can operate a vehicle 26,000 pounds or more. Essentially what we've done in this is that we've gotten rid of A and B. We have a C, but we have a C with an endorsement. The endorsement is an endorsement Z. At this point in time, the passage of the bill, you can operate a vehicle with a regular C license up to a combination vehicle up to 39,001 pounds. The reason that was picked was because you have a triple axle trailer gooseneck with three singles. They're 9,000 apiece. A one-ton pickup is a 12,000-pound gross vehicle weight. That'll add up to your 39,000 pounds. So we wanted to make sure that anybody went out and bought a pickup, bought a fifth wheeler, wouldn't have to worry about getting pulled over because they didn't have the proper licensing. The other thing on that, and this was brought up by the department, is that when you get over this 39,000 pounds, a lot of times you get into air brakes. And if you get into air brakes, you better start having some testing, and you better know what the air brakes are and how to work them, how to back them off, and how to do other things. Air brakes necessarily are not on the 39,000 pounds. Unless vehicles, they were fine with this weight. The endorsement, Mr. Chairman, or an endorsement Z, that essentially lets you to operate A and B class, our old A and B class vehicles. Now, to get this endorsement, there's a couple of ways you can do it. One, you can have an affidavit and take a written test. Or two, you can have a written test and take a skilled test. And this was the safety aspect that we had trouble in the interim trying to get around, because other states right now, Nebraska, Colorado, the surrounding states, they don't require these type of tests. Basically, if you're in agriculture, you go down and get yourself a non-hire plate. Anybody can go in the vehicle and drive on Wyoming roads up to 150 miles. So we have all the different farmers and ranchers from the other states driving into Wyoming. They don't necessarily have the same requirements that we do in this bill, but we wanted to be a little safer. We didn't want to make it quite as onerous as the CDL driver's licenses. So, but there is the affidavit, and there is a written and a skills test if you don't have the affidavit. A and B licenses are grandfathered in over on lines 9 and 10 on page 3. Page 4, it says what the requirements are and what a farm and ranch vehicle is and when they can't operate a vehicle. and it's essentially used to transport agricultural products, farm or ranch machinery, farm or ranch supplies, or any combination of those. It also is for firefighters and other commercial vehicles, and for the member of the active duty military. So those are the other people that can get a Z endorsement. With that, Mr. Chairman, I stand for any questions. If there's anything specific, I think it makes it a little easier for agriculture to get their products and to market, and all their tractors and stuff to different areas. But it's not as easy as our surrounding states. It's not a carte blanche exemption. It takes into account the necessary safety requirements that we felt were important in Wyoming to preserve.
Further discussion on substitute 29, Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple questions for the maker. I'm a little confused here. The first paragraph there on page 2, we talk about 26,000 pounds. Then we move to on page 3 to 39,000 pounds or more. So this Z license, the person could operate a 39,000 pound or more up to 80,000, I'm assuming that is, because that's the other stepping mark. And I need to understand also, does the Z license, no one under 18 can get that Z license, I'm assuming. I guess that's what this says, but it's a little confusing. The other thing is, he can get a license to operate from 39,000 pounds to 80,000 or 120, whatever he can get permitted for, and just by signing by a person currently licensed to operate a vehicle of this weight. So I'm assuming that's a guy with a C and a Z endorsement. He could actually write an affidavit for that guy. And I guess that'd be all right if it isn't an 18-year-old. And then the other question is, what happened to the personal motorhomes?
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Meyer?
You're right about the two different weights, and it is because of the 18-years-old requirement by the feds. So your assumptions were right on that. As far as who can sign the affidavit, it's essentially anybody that can operate those heavy vehicles. It could be a commercial licensed driver, or it could be a driver with a Z endorsement. So, I forgot your other question. I'm sorry. Pardon?
Motorhomes.
Oh, motorhomes. Motorhomes are exempt in the federal law, and they're not necessarily part of the Wyoming statutes as far as anybody getting in and driving them. Yeah.
Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to be sure, and it's the same kind of question that I understand. For a CDL, a Class C, you don't require a CDL license, but if you have the Z authorization, it's for 39 or more. And the Z is really a holder of a Class C license under subsection D. So if you're over 39,000 pounds to 80, you need a CDL. That's the first question. Then the second question is, what happens to 26,000 to 39,000 pounds? Do you need a Class C or the Z authorize that, or do you need a CDL?
Senator Meyer.
From 26,000 to 39,000, it's age-dependent. If you're 18 and under and you have a Class C license, you can only operate a vehicle up to 26,000 pounds. So the people that are above 18 and have a C license, those are the people that can operate a vehicle up to and above up to 39,000 pounds. Now, for people to operate a vehicle above 39,000 pounds, you can do it one or two ways. You can have a CDL just like we have now, go through the whole rigmarole, do your skills driving test, everything else, you know, and pass all of the written tests with the air brakes and everything like that, that just the way they have it written today. or you can get what's called a Z endorsement. That's a limited endorsement that basically says that's based on the federal government's rules and regulations of exemptions that you can operate within 150 miles of your main home base. And you can only do that when you're hauling your goods and you can't haul for hire. If you haul for hire, that's a commercial license. So I hope you got that right. If you want a Z endorsement, if you want to operate just hauling your stuff, you know, within 150 miles of your farm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One follow-up. I understand that. And, of course, if you're having farm-related and you're between 26 and 39, which is a horse trailer with a unit on it and a one-ton pickup, you're okay. You don't need a CDL. But what if you're in another business and, say, you're a plumbing operator and you have a one-ton pickup and you've got a backhoe on a fifth-wheel trailer that's 27.5, is that person going to have a CDL then? They won't get the same treatment as the exemption applies for agriculture, or is that even a part of this bill?
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, from my understanding is that a C license is a C license whether you're an oil man, a plumber, a farmer, or a fisherman. Doesn't make any difference. C license is up to 39,000 pounds. There's no discrimination there. Anybody should be able to drive that rig, that 39,000 pounds, if they go out and want to buy a fifth-wheeler and any fifth-wheeler that's on the market, because we put the biggest axle, gross-weighted axle weight of any fifth-wheeler you can buy today is covered by this bill. So you can go shopping for a fifth-wheeler and don't worry about what you get. And you can shop for a one-ton pickup, don't worry about what you buy. Gross vehicle weight under 39,000, you're fine. You don't need a separate license.
Further discussion? Question being called. Are all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 29, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. And Senator Coe.
The Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've read the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, it's all yours. I'll fetch your.
Reports from standing committees.
I'm going to read in a couple bills.
January the 26th, 2015, Mr. Predner, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 42, Task Force on Mineral Taxes, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 26th, 2015, Mr. Predner, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, and Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 26th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 2, Appropriation, to whom was referred Senate File 63, Predator Ownership. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 26th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 78, Education Dual Language Immersion Program. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 26th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 81, Lifesaver Program 2. reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wassenberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, move the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Ron Flair.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Committee of the Whole will come back to order. Senators, I will point your attention to the board. There's been some bills added to it. Next bill for our consideration is 42. Would the reading clerk please read it in?
Senate File 42, Task Force on Mineral Taxes, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinsey, Landon, and Peterson, Senator Peterson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wassenberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Peterson, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable consideration on Senate File 42, Task Force on Mineral Taxes. And there's a standing committee amendment. I'd ask for that to be read in at this time.
I can read in the, it is Senate File 42, Standing Committee Number 1, page 5, line 16. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 42. I'll go ahead and explain this bill, and then when I get to that amendment, we'll get that taken care of. Mr. Chairman, this is the Revenue Committee's number one task during the interim was to look at ad valorem and severance tax on our mineral taxes.
Senator Peterson, can I interrupt you for a second?
Mr. Chairman?
That amendment hasn't been distributed. Does anybody have Standing Committee number one for Senate File 42? It hasn't been distributed. Okay. With no objection, we'll move this one back one and take on Senate File 63 while they do distribute the new amendment. Yes, Senator Cooper? And that hasn't been distributed yet either?
No. Mr. Chairman, it has not.
Body stand at ease until the sound of the gavel.
No. Mr. Chairman, number 42 is coming out right now.
Right as we speak. Okay, we'll give him another second here. We're back in Committee of the Whole. How about that? That was quick. Okay, with the reading clerk, please read in the bill, Senate File 63.
Okay.
You got it, Dick?
No.
Senate File 63, Predator Ownership, sponsored by Senator Anderson.
Yeah.
It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Barnard, Cooper, Kraft, and Johnson, Senator Cooper, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hester, Ross, and Wassenberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Cooper, you've heard the reading of the bill, and can I remind everybody we're on Senate File 63, and Senator Cooper, it's all yours.
Mr. Chairman, just to point it, it's coming out right now. Okay, I'll do it. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises and reports that do so with the recommendation that Senate File 63 do pass. Mr. Chairman, there is a Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, which is being passed out now. And if the clerk or reader has this, I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Would you please read it in?
Senate File 63, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 63 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, for an explanation of the bill and the amendment, I'd like to yield the floor to Senator Anderson, O2.
Senator Anderson, O2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, I think to repeat, this is in fact a discussion of Senate File 63. Senate File 63 has to do with predator ownership. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I think that even though the Committee of the Whole amendment is short, I think it's integral to the bill. So having had that amendment moved, I would speak to the amendment at this time. The amendment, as you see it, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 63, page 1, line 2, after the word definition, insert providing rulemaking authority. To continue on with that amendment, page 2, line 3, after Wyoming Statute 11-1-103, insert, I quote, the Department of Agriculture shall adopt rules and regulations necessary to implement this section. Mr. Chairman, I would then entertain any discussion or questions in regard to that amendment. If not, then I would call for the question on the amendment.
Okay, we're on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Any further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 of Senate File 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Number 163 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We're on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it's not a long bill, but I think I'll spend some time talking about the details of the bill. And then at the end of my discussion, I'm going to defer to the co-sponsor, Senator Emmerich. And it's not often that you get expert testimony on the floor. You get that mostly in committee. But we do are fortunate in having a veterinarian with a good deal of knowledge about this. So I'll go through the bill, and then we'll let Senator Emmerich talk about the reasons for the bill, the background on the bill, what we hope to accomplish with the bill. Mr. Chairman, in regard to the bill, I received a letter, as some of you others did, from a veterinarian in my community, and his question was simply, he could not understand why in Wyoming we would allow for ownership of predators when we did not have all the necessary vaccines in order to treat those animals or the danger of contracting rabies from those in the event they were to pass that on. I'll leave that to Senator Emmerich to go ahead and talk about the efficacy and things of that, but simply say this then is a bill or act relating to predatory animals that would prohibiting ownership of a predator without a permit, providing for a definition, and then providing for a penalty, and as our amendment, providing for rulemaking authority, as our amendment inserted later, talking about Department of Ag having that rulemaking authority. The bill essentially says under 11-6-109, which was created, no person shall knowingly own or possess a living predator unless the person has obtained a permit. So we're not completely denying the ownership. We're just simply saying you must go to the Department of Ag in order to secure a permit to own one from the Department of Agriculture that would give them the approval to own the predator. The director shall not issue a permit under this section if the director determines that ownership of the predator presents any threat of public health or safety. And that's central to the foundation or for the reason for the bill being brought forward. And then it goes on and talks about failure to comply with this section, punished under the statutes of 11-1-103 as used in this section. Under, quote, predator means a predatory animal is defined. Then it gives the statutory citation 23-101, and I'll say, for your reference, that statute under the Game and Fish statutes defines predators as we talk about them in this bill in terms of the coyote, the jackrabbit, porcupine, raccoon, red fox, skunk, and stray cat. Many questions about wolves. Or wolves are in another. It's absolutely illegal to own a wolf in Wyoming. I would just say
maybe in passing quickly over this section, I received a number of calls, particularly from east of the Mississippi, in regards to the stray cat. Now, their request was to have that removed. Well, I wasn't willing to remove that, and I know that's been discussed, I think, within this body before, and it's a difficult proposition. The idea, and I live on the river, but off of a county road, and there's a lot of dumping of cats, and they go down and they make their way along the river, and so they become feral cats or stray cats. The reference from the eastern part of the country was in regard to alley cats. So I would simply say, rather than remove the term stray cat, that we have given them, the Department of Agriculture, the ability to promulgate rules that would recognize programs in places such as Cheyenne and others in regard to adopting stray cats, alley cats, or whatever. So that would be, I think, accommodated under that promulgation of rules, recognizing the advantage of being able to adopt these animals. Anyway, 11 through 23 has to do with the violation, and it has a list of section that talk about misdemeanor and punishments and that. And so really the final part of the bill over into the final page has to do with the penalties and sections and the enforcement thereof. This, and I think it was made at least evident in the report from the Appropriation Committee, would not require an appropriation. In fact, a representative from the Department of Ag said that they could issue these permits, promulgate the rules without any additional appropriation. So there is no appropriation. Having said that, oftentimes it's been said, you know, the devil is in the details. So there's considerable amount of detail to this. And again, Mr. Chairman, I would yield then to my good colleague, Senator Emmerich, and allow him then to elaborate on some of the detail now that has driven the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Emmerich, do you want to take on this critter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd beg for your indulgence as I give you just a little bit of history. I want to refer to zoonotic diseases. Those of you who are not familiar with the term, it's a disease that is transmissible between humans and animals. There are, that I'm aware of, probably 75 to 100 right at this stage. I don't have the number on the top of my hat, but they relate to brucellosis, which we've heard considerable discussion, campylobacter, which comes from cattle, unpasteurized milk, to humans. We have tularemia, which can be transmitted by the vicious bunny rabbit that is listed as a predator. And then the one I wish to speak about is rabies. Rabies is a Lyssa virus. It's acute, progressive, fatal encephalitis. It's transmitted by any mammal, transmitted by the bite of that animal. There are strains or variants of the disease. Raccoon strain, fox, skunk, bat, and there is a canine strain, which has been essentially eliminated from the United States. That doesn't mean a canine can't get it. It's just that that individual strain has been eliminated. Transmission, as I said, is by a bite or saliva entering a mucous membrane, your eye, your mouth, a cut, to where it gains entrance into the body. The incubation of the disease is along nerve roots and along nerves. It is not via blood or anything of the sort. The virus must travel up the nerve to the brain. Incubation can range from 3 to 12 weeks and can sometimes go as high as 7 months. So the exhibition of the disease in the bitten creature can be very short if they're bitten around the head or the mouth, because the transmission is to the salivary glands and to the brain. If the bite happened to be in the foot of a very large animal, that transmission may take a little bit longer. Signs of the disease are many. Inappetence, not showing an ability or a desire to eat, a difficulty to eat, cranial nerve deficits, behavior problems. These are the ones we primarily see in skunks and raccoons. There's abnormal behavior, paralysis, vocalization, and the final sign, death. Now, as I mentioned, there are several strains, two of which are seen somewhat in our country, skunk and raccoon. Raccoon rabies is primarily in Mississippi River Valley and things of that sort, but skunk rabies is found in Wyoming in abundance. We'll see skunks that are doing inappropriate things. Of course, I can't think of a skunk doing an appropriate thing, but traveling in daylight, being aggressive, no fear. These are indications that something's wrong. Now, in Laramie County, we have had several cases of skunk rabies moving north out of state south of us. And these skunks appear to be delaying their incubation a bit by 2 to 3 days, so they're showing 2 to 3 more days of strange, sometimes aggressive behavior before they die. And therefore, we're seeing more of these skunks right here in this county. Now, these can also spill over into bats and any other mammal. It isn't often that you need to worry about the bite of a tree squirrel, even though they can get rabies, because usually the bite that infects them is quite sufficient to also cause their demise. Now, people have in the past, and I'll have to say that I, in a previous life as a veterinarian, would descent skunks, would okay cute little raccoons. I would never vaccinate them because I didn't have a vaccine to vaccinate them. I would say, well, you've got to keep them quarantined for 6 months to make sure they're not carrying the disease. Well, I gave that game up a long time ago because it truly is not safe, ladies and gentlemen. It really isn't. There are vaccines available right now for dogs, cats, horses, and ferrets. Under extreme circumstances, you can vaccinate horses and cattle if there is an outbreak. The problem is if you vaccinate valuable cattle, they can never be sent to slaughter because that's an adulteration in food safety inspection rules. You can do it to horses because not many of us are into eating horses recently. So think of the fact that there are only 4 vaccines. We can't vaccinate raccoons and skunks. We don't know what kind of vaccine it's going to take, how often they have to be vaccinated. There are too many unanswered questions, and there is also no funds out there for a company to develop a rabies vaccine. There's no market, and the costs of vaccine development are huge, millions of dollars. So it comes down to the fact wild animals, predators, particularly skunks, fox, raccoons, should never ever be kept as pets. Anecdotal story of a gentleman that had some, shall we call them free-range pigs. Wooded area. Several of the piglets came back in acting inappropriate, ataxic, wouldn't eat, went into a coma, and died. They have been exposed in this eastern part of the central United States to skunks that were traveling in the woods. They picked up the virus, were bitten, was a death sentence to them. Think of what happens if you have a skunk that you want to have as a pet and it happens to nip your finger. Oh, don't worry. It's not going to be bad. Dies in about a week. You're in trouble, my friends, because by that time, post-exposure prophylaxis. That's easy for me to say. Post-exposure prophylaxis is a series of injections given to those individual humans who have been exposed to the rabies virus. It's not as arduous as it once was. Our physician friend over here will probably say that, but it is not comfortable, it's not pleasant, and it is extremely expensive. And there is no reason to go through that if you don't have to. So what I'm saying is all mammals can catch rabies. Why should we foster two of the most common species that are capable of rapidly transmitting rabies? We can't do much about bats, but that's why vaccination in our domestic animals is so important. I would like to close with a statement that is, and this is the compendium of rabies vaccination and care and treatment and all of that. But this is a statement from the American Veterinary Medical Association, American Public Health Association, Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists, National Animal Control Association, and the National Association of State Public Health Veterinarians. There's a few others, but I'm tired of talking about them. They all say, we strongly recommend the enactment and enforcement of laws prohibiting the importation, distribution, translocation, and private ownership of predators. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Emmerich, for that cheery presentation. Any further comments on Senate File 63? Senator Anderson.
Chairman, I'd just like to say, in regard to this piece of legislation, I think there's no higher order in legislation than that that deals with health and safety. And I would submit those aspects to you. I would say it's often been said there's exceptions to every rule. I know that there might be exceptions, but these can be accommodated by means of rule and reg. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would urge the favorable consideration of the body, and thank you so much. Thank you to my co-sponsor.
Further discussion on Senate File 63, seeing none, question. All those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 43. 42, excuse me, correction.
Senate File 42, Task Force on Mineral Taxes, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. There's got to be another here. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes. Senators Cates, Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson, Senator Peterson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, and Wasserberger, excuse. Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Peterson, thank you for your patience. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable do pass on Senate File 42, Task Force on Mineral Taxes. There's a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask for that to be read in at this time.
Please read it in.
Senate File 42, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 16.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 42. And I'll explain this amendment and then move on to the rest of the bill. On page 5, line 16, there was some discussion in our committee about these amounts. As you look on the last couple of pages of this bill, one is for $30,000, the other one is for $15,000. And for further explanation of the $30,000, we thought we would insert on page 5, line 16, and other expenses of the task force. It better clarifies that $30,000 that would be expended to meet other costs and obligations besides the task member or the force members of this task force itself. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions. And if no questions, I would go ahead and move this amendment.
Amendment's been moved. We're on the amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 42, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee 1, Amendment 1 to Senate File 42 has passed committee. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is Committee Number 3's basic interim work that we did throughout this interim was looking at this mineral taxation that we presently have. Just for background information for the body, this is not a popular subject with either the industry, the counties. Anybody that's been involved with severance tax or ad valorem is not happy with our present system. You've heard the stories of counties having to refund millions of dollars. The latest one was about $13 million back to industry a year after the money had been spent by that county. And so this, was, you can imagine, causes serious problems with county budgets. Basically, starting on page 1, I'll walk you through the bill. Section 1, we start to describe the members of the task force. Two members from the Wyoming State Senate, two members from the House, appointed by the Speaker, the Senate members appointed by the Senate President. On page 2, line 7, we talk about six members appointed by the Governor. Those members would include industry, oil and gas, also one person from industry representing mining and solid materials. Line 11, one shall be a county assessor. Line 12, one shall be a county commissioner. And line 13, one shall be a member, county treasurer. And then in line 13, a member of the public. On line 16, we talk about being staffed by, of course, the Legislative Service Office. Line 20, page 2, we talk about the task force may engage in the services of research firms where consulting experience, expertise as necessary to carry out the purpose of this act. We turn over to page 3. We talk about the top of page 3. The task force should be shall hold at least 4 public meetings each year. This task force will go through 2 years. On line 7, line 8, we talk about the task force and the recommendations, what they shall study and what they shall recommend, a fair and viable and simplified system of valuation and taxation for minerals, thus making recommendations. They shall, on line 13, establish criteria for determining and evaluating state and local mineral valuation and taxation options. Line 17, establish a priority list of addressing the valuation and taxation of each mineral, with the highest priority being minerals for which the administration of valuation and taxation has the most complexity. Turning the page, page 4, they shall also, line 1, develop a fair and understandable valuation. Line 5, consider whether proposed changes to the mineral severance tax and the mineral gross product tax can be made revenue neutral. That's important. Line 10, consider any constitutional issues which may be raised in relation to the recommendations of the task force and recommended solutions. And they shall have this report ready and submitted to the Joint Revenue Interim Committee no later than November 30th, 2016, to the Joint Revenue Interim Committee. Then they'll consider the recommendations and develop legislation as it deems appropriate for consideration by the legislature. The task force shall exist until December 31st, 2016. And then we go into on line 14, the amounts that we feel are necessary to fund this committee or this task force. Line 14, $30,000. That will pay for the Legislative Service Office, salary per diem for the legislative task force members, turning the page, top of page 6, $15,000 to the governor's office for payment of authorized per diem and mileage for the non-legislative task force members. And then, of course, section G there on line 5, we talk about any unobligated funds but reverting back to the general fund. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that is the essence of the task force and the bill. This was throughout the interim, your revenue committee studied this issue, had great presentations, brought the committees both in the House and the Senate up to speed on our mineral taxation as it is at present. It's a large issue. It's an important issue, extremely important, as it is one of our largest sources of revenue in the state. And as I mentioned, Mr. Chairman, nobody's happy with it right now. It's the most complicated system that most of these industries have to deal with in the surrounding states. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, we feel as a revenue committee that this task force is necessary. It's time that we look at this and in 2 years have a serious recommendation and some legislative steps to rectify our complicated system with the purpose of keeping it revenue neutral and with the purpose of making it easy, transparent for both industry and counties, and so we don't have all of these protests and other problems that we've had in the past. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Further discussion, Senate File 42's Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the Chairman of the Revenue Committee is, usually when they have a task force, there's a perceived problem out there, or there's something that's really not working. I know that the taxation issues are complicated. Have you had, has anybody like assessors came or county commissioners or industry said we need to look at that? I know we had some issues in discussion about coal a couple of years ago, and maybe that's what's driving it. I'm just curious as to the background. I mean, if there's not really a problem, we go looking for one, we'll find it. I understand that, and what we come back with, and it could be a whole different thing. It's pretty complicated, but it seems to me it's kind of working, so maybe you could help us out a little bit more. Why the need?
Further discussion, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good question. This has been a long time coming. I can just say that the County Assessors Association, the County Treasurers Association, the County Commissioners Association support this task force. They're not happy. There is a problem. There have been appeals, one after another. Industry is certainly not happy. They have floors and floors back in their offices in Oklahoma with attorneys staffed and ready to go and usually full-time jobs just basically appealing, protesting these taxes that they owe the state of Wyoming through the county assessor's office in each of our counties that this activity is going on. So, yes, it is a problem. It has been coming in a long time, and it's something that the Revenue Committee feels strongly that we need to get a handle on and time to look at it, simplify it, find out what other states around us are doing, do the comparative study and have these recommendations by this task force to involve industry, to involve our counties, and that's the revenue's feelings, Mr. Chairman. And so with that, any further questions?
Further discussion, Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question just about a task force, and there's some really good talent on the Joint Revenue Committee, including the chairman that understands these issues. Is there a real reason to, we're the one that's going to make the decision. We're going to draft the legislation. Why do we just not keep it within a standing committee or have it all be legislators? Is there a real driving force behind having other people on the task force?
Further discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The information that we can get from this industry, all these industries involved with this type of taxation, is invaluable. Although we might understand our tax structure somewhat, having served myself on the county level and going through some of those problems with oil and gas, I don't have the expertise on coal. Other task force members with our turnover just this last session. During the interim, we had great studies and great presentations by industry and by our Department of Revenue, and now we have a new revenue committee almost with two of us remaining and three new members. So there, because of that turnover, both in the House and the Senate, we have that problem and challenge to deal with new members bringing them up to speed on the issues. And so we would be constantly going through this, bringing up to speed with new committee members. And so with the expertise of the industry, we felt that it was necessary to get them on board from the get-go, get their input, so the decision that we finally do make is good with them, good with our counties, And that's why this committee is so invaluable. We don't want to ramrod something through, shove something down somebody's throat. We want everybody involved from the get-go, and we feel that, Mr. Chairman, that would be the best solution to this problem that we're experiencing at this time.
Further discussion on Senate File 42. Seeing none, ready for the question? Oh, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, if we change the system around, we're going to lose quite a little bit of legal precedent that we've got on the existing system that gives us some confidence in the results we're going to get with it. Could you comment a little about that with regard to this bill and any needs to redo things?
Senator Peterson? No. Senator Case?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just give the gentleman a break. He's doing a great job. Mr. Chairman, that is a good point. There's just no question that our tax system has been litigated six ways to Sunday, but actually I'm not sure that in the main thrust of litigation has accomplished anything. It's been litigated, in essence, since all these rules were put in by former Department of Revenue personnel. It's sort of been litigated consistently. Some of the results are inconsistent. And, the issue of constitutionality, it's not inconceivable that we might agree to change the Constitution as we go forward about how mineral taxes should be established. We could make it a lot simpler and probably better for everyone involved. I think as we come out, that'll be something we'll learn more about, the precedents in the different cases and the different ways. We've got things all over the map for different kinds of minerals, and we've got all over the map within the same kind of mineral. And it really could use some work. And this was something, the most important thing that came out of your interim committee. I'd hope you'd support it.
Further discussion on Senate File 442. Senator Rothfuss? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 42, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 42 is passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Senator Coe, sorry.
Move committee the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Let me steal this out of here.
The reading clerk will read the committee the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 55, do pass. Senate File 98, laid back, amended. Senate File 101, do pass, amended. Senate File 106, do pass. Senate File 3, do pass, amended. Senate File 100, do pass, amended. Senate File 29, do pass, amended. Senate File 42, do pass, amended. And Senate File 63, do pass, amended. Senator Von Flatren, Chairman.
Senator Von Flatren.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I move for the adoption of the committee of the whole report.
Heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That report has been adopted. Okay, messages from the House.
January 26, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 149, third reading, pass, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 85, Motor Vehicle Passing Bicycles. Ayes 23, noes 25, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
That clears the desk. Senator Cole.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, January 27th, 2015.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, by way of advance notice, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, is planning to hold a Medicaid expansion day on Wednesday. We will not be requesting further public testimony. It will be dependent a little bit on us getting another bill introduced and through the paper factory, so we may post some other bills as well. But that's the plan. If the other bill doesn't get introduced, we may have to put the plan off.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, first I'd like to announce that the Ag Committee and the Select Water Committee are invited to be out at the Wyoming State Forest Division at the Little American tonight at 6:30. They'll go through their whole plan and all that. So those people are all invited to come out there. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, your Committee Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources will meet Tuesday night, January 27th, upon adjournment. We'll take up Senate File 80, Trespass to Collect Data Civil Cause of Action, Senate File 108, Access to Private Land Restrictions, and SJR 6, Sage Grouse.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S14 to consider the following bills. Senate File 103, Bicycle Pathway and Highway Separation, and Senate File 109, State Parks Leases, Legislative Approval.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet upon adjournment up in S14 to consider Senate File 95, Speed Limits, and Senate File 97, Department of Transportation, Communication Facilities. In about 10 minutes, right up here.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, 30 minutes after noon recess. We'll be discussing all exemptions. We'll have a presentation by our Director of Department of Revenue, Mr. Noble, and he will have a great presentation on all present and current exemptions that we have for our committee to study. So that'll be very, very exciting.
Senator Von Flatern, would you approach the desk, please? Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Tomorrow, upon adjournment, Management Council will meet in room 302.
Any announcements? You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. We're adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.